He is Jesus. And he is the one who has come that we might overcome. He already has overcome, and he's calling us to a life of being a people that will overcome. And I am so looking forward to our morning, our time together, both here in this space and for those of you who will join later online as well. We come to a topic today that I knew for certain as we were putting this Overcome series together that we had to talk about, that it would be not only naive, it would be foolish for us as a church to not talk about this topic. And so I'm looking forward to our time. Today we're going to come to the topic of pornography, our brokenness, and our soul, and how all these things come together and tie together. A couple things I want to intro and just kind of put out there is why this is so significant, why we as a church have to talk about this subject. You can find a number of different statistics, but the ballpark on this subject is this, that 70 to 85% of men, when anonymously you're like giving feedback on this, will admit that pornography use is something they've battled with, something they're currently struggling with, and a reality that they have to wrestle through. Like that's pretty much all the guys in here, all right? Interestingly enough, this is so important for us to hit, okay? This is not just a men's issue. I want to be so clear on that. When you look at statistics on women in pornography, you'll find that about one-third of people viewing pornography today are women. All right? So this is not just something where Daniel and I are talking up here as guys. This is something that relates to women, to the ladies as well, and that's so important. The reality is in COVID, where we've been dealing with the pandemic, there's this endemic, if you will, of pornography use that's skyrocketing in this season. I was doing some kind of background work on putting this together, and I watched some of your material from another time you were teaching, and I heard something and some information passed on that I was like, oh my word, I need this to land, and so I wanted to use it. On one porn site alone, okay, so this information I'm going to give you right now comes from one website dedicated to porn. They have 2.4 million users or visits per hour. 2.4 million per hour. In the course of 1 year, all right, this really hit home and landed for me. There's 4.4 trillion hours of pornography viewed. This is one porn site. If the church does not speak into this issue, we're not only kidding ourselves, we're not doing our job. We got to be willing to confront some of these messy topics. That thought, 4.4 trillion hours of porn in a year, just to kind of help us understand that, that's twice the amount of hours that Homo sapiens have been on the planet. Like, this is crazy how much this has become the norm and a part of our culture and a part of our society. And frankly, the scriptures and Jesus, they're not silent on this topic. Jesus is not silent. And he says some things that for me have been deeply, deeply convicting on this subject in my life. He speaks like this in Matthew chapter 5. If anyone looks at another with lust, it's as though he commits adultery in his heart. It's not just a brokenness issue, it's a soul issue. It affects us to the core of our being. Thus, we need to talk about it. As a fellowship like this, and in the midst of the digital world, online as well. And so I have invited and brought Daniel, his wife Tanya, who will join us in just a minute, as a couple minutes as well today. Daniel is someone that I deeply respect for the work that he does. Like I said, he is the one guy that I knew I had to get here in the midst of this Overcome series. He had spent 16 years a part of an organization called Journey Canada. Predominantly at the end of your time there, you were the Associate Executive Director, and really an organization that kind of specializes in just sexuality. Pornography is just one branch of that. And I know there's a transition in your life happening right now, and that's fine. Nonetheless, you have countless experiences, just speaking on this topic, investing and into others and helping people like begin that journey of finding freedom and healing and wholeness. So it was just so important for me to have you here. And I know that you're a man who's transparent and honest and real, and that matters in culture and in the world today. And so welcome here.
Thank you.
We're good really, to be here. Really glad you're with us. And to kind of just like set this up and kind of help move us along, why don't we just start with you and your story and your journey that includes a battle with pornography. Can you just kind of set the table of who you are, where you've come from, and your struggles in battle?
Yeah, absolutely. So good to be here with you guys. For myself, a bit of background. I was born and raised in Calgary, so I'm a thorough Calgary Flames fan.
Woohoo!
Yes? No, boo. Okay, thought I'd be start off on the right foot. Born and raised in Calgary, and my struggles with porn began when I was about 12 years old. I'm the youngest of four kids, and so when I was 12 years old, my oldest brother, who was 17, died the summer that he graduated high school. So my brother graduated, and then he drowned tragically just outside of Calgary. I was 12 years old, so picture a kid just finishing grade 6 on the cusp of puberty, and that my brother's death just rocked my world, and didn't know what to do with that pain, with that trauma. My parents are Japanese, and my Japanese background, and not really known to be the most emotionally warm kind of culture, and so that totally played into, my environment during that traumatic time. So, nobody was there to ask me how I was doing. I don't have a single memory of us grieving as a family. I never saw my dad cry once about my brother dying. And so for me, I was left kind of alone, kind of in the time of my deepest pain, my deepest need. I was kind of alone. And I think I cried the day that my brother died, and then I just shoved down all of my emotions and just, I didn't know what to do with it. And I was so kind of detached from my emotions that by the time of my brother's funeral, I didn't even cry at my own brother's funeral because I was so detached emotionally. And that's kind of the state that I was in on the cusp of puberty, on the cusp of, junior high, which all of us loved, right? Junior high, favorite years. Definitely not. And so going into those years of junior high, that's when I was exposed to pornography. And there was something about it that just drew me in, seeing nakedness, intimacy, seeing this form of human connection that, I knew that it was wrong, but there was something about it that drew me in. And it makes sense for me as an adult looking back when I was a 12-year-old kid. Like I was a confused kid, a kid in pain, just looking for comfort, looking for escape. And that's definitely what kind of drew me in. There was some kind of sense of intimacy that I saw, some sense of love, some sense of human connection, because in my own life, I just had none of that. I was so desperate. I mean, I couldn't articulate it at the time. Obviously, as an adult, I can look back and see what was going on. But that was kind of how I got into pornography and looking at it and using it. But definitely, I began to kind of escape into pornography for other reasons. I mean, I was an awkward junior high kid. And so in my insecurities, not knowing how to create friendships, not knowing who I was, feeling lonely, all those kinds of things, I just lost myself in this kind of world of pornography, which again had some sense of maybe comfort or beauty or intimacy, and I just lost myself. And that was kind of the beginning of me kind of getting addicted to pornography. And it really was an addiction. Like I was born and raised in the church, and so I knew, I'd heard the Sermon on the Mount, you shouldn't do this, and so I felt bad about it, but I just kind of couldn't stop myself from accessing pornography. And I'll share this one story that I didn't share yesterday, but, it really kind of, exemplifies my struggle with pornography. Back then, there was no internet. I'm 41 years old, so back then, no internet, and so it was magazines. So I'd steal magazines or try to find pornography, and I remember I hated the feeling of it. I felt guilty about it. I knew that it was wrong. And so I decided I'm going to burn my pornography. Like, I want to get rid of this in my life. And so I remember I had my first pornographic magazines, and I stuck them under my shirt, and I went behind my house to burn it. This kind of idea, like, I hate this. I want to get rid of this. And so I went behind my house, and put lighter fluid on it. Don't ask me why I had lighter fluid. Lighter fluid, and I lit it on fire. And in my mind, I thought, I want to get rid of this. I hate what this does to me. And I lit it on fire. I don't know what I was thinking, but it was like two magazines, and it just started to go up in smoke. And then my neighbor started to come out of his house. And I'm sitting there looking like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm not going to stick that back under my shirt. So I start to walk up the alley, kind of pretending like, I don't know what's going on. I start to walk up, and I remember my neighbor's voice behind me saying, hey, what are you doing? And I just pretend like I didn't hear him, and I just kept walking. And I could kind of feel his eyes in the back of my head. And internally, I was like, I hope he doesn't tell my dad. I just felt so much shame. Like, I wish the earth would swallow up, open up and swallow me, because I did not want to be there. And I just felt so much shame about myself. And I kind of vowed, like, I don't want anybody to know about this. You know, I hate that. I hate what he's thinking about me. I hate about the consequences that might happen. And I just, you know, all of this shame kind of wrapped around me. But unfortunately, you know, about a week later, I was looking for it again, like, because I was so hungry. And so I tried to find it again. And that was this cycle of wanting it, using it, hating it. And then I just began to hate myself. Like, what's wrong with me that I'm doing this thing that I actually don't want to do? And that began this cycle again of self-hatred, of using pornography. And that followed me from, you know, the time I was 12 years old into adolescence, into adulthood. Went into Bible college. I felt kind of, you know, I experienced God in a profound way in my late teens. Went to Bible college, thought that would kind of fix me, you know, eventually got married, became a pastor, thought those things would fix me. And yet this struggle with pornography just continued on as this kind of theme in my life and, you know, really was beating me up. You know, I felt so much shame. I had so much isolation about it. I really didn't talk to people about it. And so it really was a thread from my childhood kind of up to this day. You know, so it's been a big theme in my life that I've had to kind of wrestle with. So that's a bit of background of my story in pornography.
Thanks for having the courage to share, to, you know, be vulnerable, put that out, not just with our fellowship, but like the World Wide Web, right? Like,
hello. Yeah.
I mean, that takes courage, and we respect that. We appreciate you doing that with us. Let's just back up a little bit and understand a little bit more about pornography.
Yeah.
Why is pornography so damaging?
Yeah, I mean, a number of reasons. I mean, you kind of heard a bit in my story, which is common for a lot of people, is, you know, I think a lot of people inherently understand pornography is wrong, you know, believers or unbelievers, but especially, you know, believers. And so they experience a lot of that guilt and shame over it. You know, like they find this hiddenness about it, and they begin to oftentimes hate themselves because it's this thing that kind of goes against their own values, and yet they can't stop. And so there's this heaping on of guilt and shame and self-hatred, which is really common for people who get stuck in pornography. So that's obviously one of the biggest damaging things that happens for people that struggle with pornography. But another thing is that, you know, really pornography, in the world of pornography, is really so damaging because it's so fake. You know, like, the whole idea is there's this idea of intimacy or love or care, yet at the end of the day, it just leaves you with even less, right? I don't actually have love. I don't actually have tenderness or care. It's just this illusion of it that you think you're getting, and yet at the end of the day, it's like I actually am left even more empty. I actually realize I'm more alone, and I am actually less loved than I thought. Right, and so it's a whole world of illusion that actually can be so damaging because it actually tricks you into thinking you're getting something, and then kind of leaves you beat up on the side of the road, being like, "Oh, I actually have nothing. I'm unlovable." When the very thing I was seeking was love, and so it's a whole world of illusion that sucks you in, but it's also highly addictive. You know, it's this highly addictive illusion, and so you know you want to stop, but you can't.
Why is it addictive? Give us a bit more on that.
It's addictive for a lot of reasons. I mean, a lot of people nowadays, you know, can understand the brain chemicals that go on, the dopamine that goes on. So it's addictive because you get such a rush, you know, from what you're experiencing. You know, that's a big part of the addiction. But it's also, we get tricked into thinking it's an easy way out. You know, it's like thinking that I'm going to find intimacy here is actually a lot easier than real life intimacy. It's like, man, real life intimacy is actually difficult. We got to deal with, you know, you not liking me and having a bad conversation. Here it just seems easier. And so it's addictive because it's such an easy way to get to thinking we're getting our needs met. But again, it's always a trick. We always think it's going to, but then we end up alone, right? But it's highly addictive because it's a lot easier to click on a button than actually call up a friend, right? I mean, it's so easy to kind of get that hit of pleasure, of comfort, of feeling good. And so that's part of kind of the highly addictive nature of it. It's also so super damaging because pornography is inherently dehumanizing. So when I say that, it's pornography is really, you're just looking at somebody or something to consume. You're not really interested in, as a human person, as an emotional person. You're not really interested in who you're looking at. Are they a brother or a sister or a mother or a child? You just are looking at them to consume them, you know, for what it can give you. So you really begin to look at people in a very dehumanizing way. It's like, I'm looking at you in terms of what you can give to me. Like, how can I consume you? How can I, why do you exist? It's to actually give me a sense of pleasure. And so you begin to look at people in a dehumanized way as just bodies, or you just judge people according to their physical bodies or physical attractiveness. And that really, you really do then, you don't look at people properly, and you begin to actually be okay using people, or you're only there to actually make me feel okay. And that begins a process whereby we can begin to act on some of this behavior, where you begin to think, well, you know, the world, there should be somebody out there just to pleasure me or to make me feel good. And you begin to dehumanize the behavior. And this is why for a lot of people, pornography use, it just doesn't begin and end there. It goes further into then you begin to abuse people, or you begin to take advantage of people or manipulate people, or to get into just risky behavior because you want more and more. And so that dehumanizing nature of it too leads to more and more damage. Like, pornography always progresses towards something when you use it. And so you see that kind of descent into darker behaviors and more damaging behaviors.
One of the things I remember learning a number of years ago that really convicted me, and this is so foreign to us in the West because it's not the way our part of the world operates or runs, but like when you head to like the Middle East or parts of Africa where there's terrorist organizations that will kidnap kids, one of the very first things they do to desensitize and dehumanize those kids is they force those kids they've kidnapped to watch porn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's a strikingly convicting, gut-wrenching thought when you realize it's being used strategically in a horrible environment like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It causes you to not look with compassion on anybody. Mm-hmm. It's you just detach from the soul of the person.
Yep.
It's just, you're just a body.
Yep. Okay. Yep. I'm going to take you off script for a second. You said something that triggered a thought in my head from the seminar you were leading yesterday. So, one of the struggles that I really feel, and you articulated it well yesterday, that we face as a church, a gathering of people that follow Jesus, is our culture has pushed us to the place where we have put our sexuality at the forefront of what makes us us.
Yeah.
We define ourselves, we find our identity in sexuality as a culture. Yeah. But as a church, as a gathering of people who follow Jesus, our understanding is that our identity is to be in Jesus first and foremost, and then everything flows from that. Can you just, you know, unpack the struggle we face, you know, in Fort Saskatchewan?
Yeah.
Wrestling through culture and sexual identity being put at the forefront of trying to define who are, rather than putting Jesus there.
Ooh. So I'm going to talk for 45 minutes right now. No, I'm just joking. No, it's true though. I mean,
this just doubled in length, this interview.
No, we do live in a culture that really pushes sex to, our culture has messages that tell us sex should fulfill you in infinite kinds of ways. I mean, the reality is, you know, God made us as sexual beings, but it's one part of our life, right? You know, but our culture says that one part of our life is actually the most important part of our life and our identity, right? And so you need to kind of, I kind of use this illustration, you got to squeeze as much as you can out of sexuality because it will provide you your identity, your fulfillment, your value, your self-worth. And so it's calling us to look at it and to try to make of it more than it actually can. You know, a Christian perspective of sexuality or of sex is, yeah, it's a good thing that God created to be experienced in marriage between a man and a woman, But you're not going to die if you don't have sex. Jesus did not have sex, and he was a full human being. You know, Apostle Paul did not have sex. He was a full human being, right? You can have a lot of sex and not have any love, right? And we're a culture hungry and thirsty for love, but we're constantly told you need to find it in sex. And so it's kind of this imbalance, and it really is a struggle because we live in this culture that constantly tells us these messages. So we often get convinced that, oh, I really do need to go have sex or have a great sexual experience because that will somehow satisfy me. And we get kind of off track now. Not to say sex is a bad thing. We don't just react and say, well, sex is bad. It's like, no, sex is good, but it's a limited good. It's a limited good. But our culture constantly tells us to try to get more out of it than we can. So I think that's a lot of the tension that we feel as Christians is we don't want to just respond and say sex is bad, but we also don't just say, well, everything, you know, expressing myself sexually in every way is good. It's like, what's the balance of that? And so that's, I think, some of the tension that we feel as Christians in our kind of hyper-sexualized culture, for sure.
I know a phrase, this is going to sound cheesy, but like
Janelle
and I believe this to the core of our being. Sex is a gift. It's a gift from God, and it's intended to be a covenant renewal ceremony in the environment of marriage between a husband and a wife, right? Yeah. It's a gift. It's intended to be a gift, but it doesn't define us. Important to go. Now, we're talking
And those of us who are married long enough realize, you know, I think when I was younger, I thought, oh, sex, you know, once I get married and have sex, everything's going to be fine. Most people who are married are like, yeah, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, like there's kind of a TV show I'd rather watch. You know, we realize like it is a good thing, but, you know, it's not like you're not shooting into the stars after, right? So I don't know if your experience is different, come talk to me. But those of us who have been married for a while, it's like, yeah, it's a good thing, but, you know, sometimes you kind of want to eat a sandwich instead, you know? So. Like a good sandwich? Come on. Really? So, chocolate? Yeah.
Your wife is coming up here in just a moment, man. Like she's going to smack you.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're getting off track here.
Yeah. But, no, we are actually, you brought us right back to the topic. The next question is on marriage in a sense.
Yeah.
I have talked with more guys than I can count. About this topic at hand, pornography. Yeah. And dare I say, every single one has said to me, I thought it would go away once I got married. Mm. And that is so far from the truth.
Yeah.
Debunk that lie for us.
Yeah, I mean, that idea, you know, I definitely kind of had some of that idea for sure as well, kind of getting married thinking, you know, I struggle with pornography, and so once I get married and I'm able to have sex, then that struggle should go away because wasn't that all about sex? But as you heard kind of from my story, like, you know, my struggles with pornography had really nothing to do with sex. It was about how I learned to cope in life. It's how I learned to deal with negative emotions. It's how I learned to comfort myself, right? And so that was the reason why I was struggling with pornography. And so the fact that I'm having sex does nothing to actually cure any of those things or somehow change the ways that I related to the world or related to my own emotional being. In fact, oftentimes marriage brought up stress, and how do I deal with stress? Well, it's pornography, right? I'm having struggles, you know, my wife is mad at me. How do I deal with people being angry at me? Well, my pattern is pornography. And so the reality is pornography for most people has very little to do with sex. You know, a term that I heard years ago, which was really helpful, was for many of us, we learn to sexualize our real needs. So we have real needs for love, for comfort, for care, for affirmation. But instead of finding those in healthy ways, we sexualize them and we think that sex is somehow going to give us those things. And so for me, that was the case. And for a lot of people, that's the case, that their struggles with pornography have nothing to do with sex. It's actually about how we're learning to cope in life. And so when you get married and you have sex, that's actually not even touching the whole reason why you struggle with pornography. And so the struggle with pornography persists. And then for the husband, it's like, oh my gosh, like it's still here. And and oftentimes it can be this bomb that kind of blows up in marriage because this thing that you thought was going to magically go away is there. And now you got to deal with it in marriage.
You used a really important word when you were talking about your story about the shame. Can you unpack just the role or the damage that guilt, shame, bondage, all those things bring around this subject?
Yeah, no, these are shame, guilt, self-hatred, bondage, these are all things that come with pornography. And, years ago, it was helpful for me to actually hear the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is feeling bad about something that you've done. Shame is feeling bad about who you are, right? And those are two distinctions. And both of those things actually come with pornography. And I felt those things. I felt guilty. I felt like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad for what I did. But there was also shame too, like, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm so screwed up. God must hate me. And those are messages of shame that began to come because of pornography too. And those are things that come kind of as consequences of sin. It's like we sin, and then these are kind of heaped on consequences. Not only do we sin, but then we get the repercussions of sin, which are oftentimes messages of guilt, messages of shame, that actually Satan is wants to heap these things on us, right? Satan's called the great tempter. He's the one that's actually tempting us to do it. And then once we do it, he's also called the accuser of the brethren. So then he steps on you and says, yeah, look at you. God doesn't love you anyways, right? And he kind of kicks you in the mouth after you sin. And so he heaps on more and more guilt, more and more shame, more and more self-hatred. And when you're stuck in that place, it really is bondage. Like it's not a happy place to be, where you feel alone. You feel like, maybe I've really screwed up too much for anybody to love me. I can't share of myself with anybody. Who would ever accept me? And those are messages that for me, obviously, were really prominent, because I never heard about it in church. In church, I never heard about sexuality or sexual brokenness or anybody saying they struggle with it. And so for me, I thought, I really must be the only one. There's something especially wrong with me. And that's a deep message of shame. Like, why would I ever share that with you, right? If I really believed, you have no idea what it's like. You don't even know how bad I am. I'm never going to share that. And so that's where a lot of bondage comes in, is when people just have so much shame, so much guilt heaped on, and they cannot believe that they're lovable. They cannot believe it. They might know in their head, Jesus loves me, God loves me, but their heart tells them something different, right? Their heart tells them something different. And so, those are some of the realities that come about because of pornography addiction. And it's like, sometimes I'll even say, like, man, like, there's caked on layers of shame and guilt on people, right? I described kind of my experience of being a kid and walking up the alley, and it was kind of like this dark, nasty blanket kind of covered me. And I think that's the reality for a lot of people. They're just covered in a sense of this shame, self-hatred, and it's such a dark place.
So in an environment like ours, we're going to have people at all places in the journey here, in their journey of processing this topic. Can you just, speak into some keys that are critical to finding health, keys to finding freedom, keys to finding just wholeness? Just give us some things that we can take and that we can apply to our own lives, understanding that there is going to be all places on the journey here.
Yeah, there's lots of things that we can do. And, again, I could talk about this for a few hours, but I'll say, a safe entry for a lot of this is that there's a lot of good information out there now. When I was a kid, it's like, I'm going to look at the church library to see if there's how to overcome porn. Like, that book didn't exist, right? But now it's like, there's a lot of good programs out there. YouTube has a lot of great videos. You type in overcoming porn addiction, there's lots of great videos and teaching. So there's a lot of good stuff out there that can begin to help you to understand, this is actually what's going on for me. Right, I'm not just the most screwed up person. There's a way to kind of understand kind of what's happening for me. So there's definitely good content out there that you can begin to get into. But that's also can be a trap. I know for years, I just wanted to do this alone with Jesus. And so I'll read a book. I'll watch a TED talk. Because I did not, that shame kept me kind of alone. And so for years, I kind of tried to fix myself, just me and Jesus. He and I will just figure this out forever. At some point we'll figure it out. And I could never do it, right? I never found victory kind of trying to do it on my own. And so there's good content out there and absolutely learn, but at some point you need other people. And so you got to include other people. And so you got to start talking about this with people, because honestly, some of those deep-rooted things of shame, self-hatred that I talked about, you will not overcome those on your own. You actually need a brother or sister in Christ to pray with you, to look you in the eye. It's one thing for you to say, oh, I know God forgives me. It's another thing to confess to somebody and for them to look you in the eye and say, you're forgiven. You're forgiven, right? You receive the forgiveness in a different way. And so at some point, I needed to actually start to do accountability, talking about it. And that was difficult. It wasn't, I remember the first time I met with a friend for accountability and I shared, and then I thought, wow, that was so hard. It took me so long to be there. Now I should somehow become perfect. And it's like, no, that was just the beginning of kind of working some of this stuff out. And so finding community, like other people, like you have to do that for sure. But also, I've been coming back again and again to the Sermon on the Mount. You know, you talked about Jesus. Like, Jesus understood sexuality and sexual temptation and sexual brokenness. And I always come back to two major things he said in the Sermon on the Mount. The first one was what you already quoted. If you even look at a woman lustfully, you've committed adultery with her, with her in your heart. And what he's saying is, you know, sexual brokenness is not just those who commit adultery. You know, the Ten Commandments, do not commit adultery. He's saying, he's taking it deeper and he's saying, you know what, it's not just that action, but it's what's going on in your heart. And it actually emerges from the heart. And so a huge journey for those of you, those of us who may struggle with sexual brokenness of all kinds is, what's going on in my heart? Because this is really where it stems out of. It's my heart, like even hearing my story, it was my heart's cry that led me to pornography. It was my heart saying, who's going to love me? Is there anybody there who sees me or cares about me, right? And for many of us, we need to take a journey of actually looking at our heart. Where is this coming from? Like, what is this? What is the cry of pornography really about? It's not about sex. Like, man, it's about my past that I've never reconciled. It's about grief that I've never wanted to look at. It's about how I feel about myself. I actually hate myself. You know, deep, deep beliefs. And that's all in the heart, right? And so it's a huge part of the journey is actually looking at the heart, starting to journal, right? Like, God, what's going on for me? Like, help me to understand my own soul. You have to look at the heart. Like, pornography is just a manifestation of the struggle that we have internally. And so we got to look at the heart. Any kind of practices that help you to do that. Solitude, silence, going on retreats, journaling, like, and talking with people actually helps to unpack the soul as well. So that's the first thing Jesus said, and I come back to that again and again and again, because we, as human beings, you have to do that again and again and again. The second thing he said was, he talked about, you know, if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. And he's saying it's better for you that that should happen than to go to hell, you know, with your whole body. And really, the principle that he's saying there is applicable in so many ways. He's saying, do something that's going to be very difficult now, like really uncomfortable. Like, he doesn't literally mean gouge out your eyes, chop off your hands, but he's saying, you have to do something right now that's going to be painful, but it's actually better for you to do that now than to feel the repercussions later. And so, and he's saying this specific to sexual struggles. So what's he saying? You know, how could we interpret that in our modern world? You know, it might be cut off the things that are actually tempting you. You know, I knew people who, you know, it's not as popular these days, but cable TV, you know, they ended their subscription. They're like, I cannot live with that. I don't even want that. I knew people who actually didn't own TVs anymore because they're like, it's too much of a source and I need to cut that off. It's painful. It makes me uncomfortable. It's kind of inconvenient, but I'm going to do that. I know people have chosen to have flip phones because they can't handle a smartphone. It's too much temptation. So they're like, it's really inconvenient. You know, I don't have Google Maps anymore, but this is actually saving me. I'm going to put passwords on all my devices. I'm not going to live with certain kinds of things. And it's uncomfortable. Again, it is painful. Like cutting off your hand, gouging your eyes, it's painful, but it's actually going to be the way to freedom. Right? And I think that idea of constant limits in your life, like recognizing I need to have limits. I actually can't live with everything because I'm not strong enough. I need to actually put barriers. But we could also interpret that passage when he says, you know, do something painful to be, do something that's going to be painful now, humiliate you right now, rather than having the greater humiliation later. What might that mean? It might be, hey, confess right now to somebody and kill the sin right now instead of letting it fester and it grow more in your life. Because it is painful to have to confess to somebody, right? And many of us think, well, I won't do that because that's really painful. I don't want to do that. That's kind of shameful. And then our sin's going to keep growing and take over more of our life. And then what, right? And this principle of do something right now that's going to be hurtful, that's going to be inconvenient, but that's actually going to save you in the long run. So, for example, joining a group. You know, if somebody says, hey, if you've been struggling with pornography and somebody says, hey, we're going to have a group to look at pornography, you know, it's painful. It's hard to kind of say, I'm going to come, right? Like, none of you are going to be wanting to be seen talking to me after, because nobody's, people are going to be like, oh, you're talking to that porn guy. I know what your struggle is, right? And for many of us, we don't want to make that step because oh, that's painful. But Jesus is saying, do that thing that's going to be difficult now, because if you don't, it's going to lead to greater destruction later, right? And he's saying this specific to sexual struggles. Like, there are some hard choices sometimes you need to make, because it's actually going to be good for you, right? And you got to do that. And so I always come back to those two principles, right? Look at the heart, because this is where it all begins. You have to find ways of looking at the heart, listening to your heart, addressing the heart issues. And then what are the things that God's constantly asking you? Like, how do you need to die to yourself today, right? A little bit of dying, a little bit of humiliation for the long run, for your own good. So those are keys to freedom. I mean, they're not pretty, they're not sexy ones, but those are the ones that Jesus told us. And again, I come back to it again and again. Man, he is so wise. He's so wise. He understands the human heart. So,
yeah. It's crazy. Like, you know, I come obviously from a different family backgrounds and a different community, but like, so much of what you said is my story in many ways. You know, I tried to self-educate myself in secret where no one knew, right?
Yeah.
The most important moment for me in my journey is that moment I didn't keep that secret. I brought into the light that which was in the dark. I remember it like clear as day. I was 24 years old. I was on a canoe trip with an older man in the faith who I trusted. And we were in the middle of a lake. And he's like, so what's the biggest thing you're struggling with right now? And then I was like, I got to tell him. And I told someone.
Or jump off the canoe.
Yeah. I told someone for the first time. Yeah. I spoke it out. That was critical, speaking that out.
And you didn't die, right? I mean, for most of us.
Still here today.
For most of us, we fear,
You
know, the condemnation, or just we can't even imagine what it's going to be like. And then to actually be sitting there being like, oh, like, we're still talking. It's like, oh, that's my guilt and shame talking. Yep. That's my self-hatred talking, right?
And then, like, taking those extreme measures. You know, like in our house, and my boys now know why, because they're old enough, but for the longest time, they didn't have a clue. Like, I don't have the passwords to change Wi-Fi to access beyond a 15, 16A movie on our TV. I don't have any of those things. And so whenever we were going to watch something, I know you were sharing your stories similar in that, like, be like, okay, Janelle, and the boy's like, Dad, how come you don't have the password for the TV? Because Dad wants to be a man after God's heart. And as they get older, I start telling them why. We start talking about why and what's going on. Like, I put boundaries in
because
I'm weak.
And sometimes it's inconvenient, right?
It sucks,
it's like,
man.
I want to just watch this war movie and, where, you know, but.
But you have to take the measures necessary to be the man that Jesus wants me, the man that I want to be.
Yeah.
You know, that matters. Yeah. On a more kind of direct way right now, I just want you to know that, like, if you're at a place where you need to kind of break the silence, bring into the light that's what's in the dark, we want you to know that this is a safe place to do that. There might be someone in this fellowship that you trust. That's good. They want to talk to you. Maybe you're unsure about that. We want you to know that you can reach out to Pastor Ashley or I. Men, you can get a hold of me in my email. You can go to our website. You can get that. Women, you could go to Pastor Ashley. You could get access that and go to her. But maybe there's even more. There's something beyond that. We want you to know that we have a couple guys that really want to help lead us into new levels of freedom as a fellowship. And they're working on something with St. Albert Alliance Church right now, partnering with them, that we might be a bit of a hub on this particular issue, where we can find community as guys on this particular subject. And so if you would like to connect with other guys and find that accountability, find that place where you can bring that which was in the dark into the light and begin to become more like that man that Jesus is calling you, but that you deep in your soul want to be too. You can shoot me an email and ask about that, and I'm going to pass on the information you'll need to get to me and get you to those two guys that want to help, that want to bring you in and into that fold and to be a part of that. On the flip side, if you're a woman that is looking to talk through perhaps struggle with pornography that's been secret or silent, or perhaps, as we'll talk about in a moment, walking through the journey of knowing your spouse is struggling and needing to talk with someone, or just the difficulty of the complex world and how sexuality has done a number on your heart, on your soul, again, just please reach out to Pastor Ashley. And we would love to be able to provide like support and care in that area. And so we just wanted to make sure you knew that there are ways that we want to practically support you as men and women on this topic. I'm going to actually invite your wife, Tanya, up.
Yep.
This has been really good. It's been really great to have you. But I'm sure that there's a number of people thinking like, man, what does your wife think about this? This guy is sharing all this kind of stuff and opening up and sharing. And so,
what kind of a woman would put up with him?
Yeah. Sandwich. Like, who would say that?
Well, she was saying, hey, I'd go with the chocolate. She was saying that down there.
I do like chocolate. So,
so Daniel's, he's been up here. Like, he's sharing his heart. He's being open and honest with a group of people that you guys have no idea who they are, if you should even trust them. Like, you've never met probably many, maybe all of these people. And yet here he is talking about his journey of struggling with pornography, that coming into even into his marriage. And I just want to hear kind of your heart on this and just realities that you faced as a spouse, that spouses in general might face as they process a partner who's struggling with pornography.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So when Daniel and I were first dating, that was when he first disclosed to me that he struggled with lust. And it was during a conversation where both of us were sharing things. So I shared about my past with sexual abuse, with abortion, and he shared about porn. And so there was a lot of gentleness with which we held each other's stuff. And so I know that's not the norm, you know, sitting here 18 years later, I know that's not the norm of disclosure. More often than not, it's like what Daniel said, like a big bomb that kind of goes off, or it's something that's been the sneaking suspicion and all of a sudden you find out. But I feel like the way in which we shared with each other, there was a gentleness and compassion that kind of covered it all. But I really had no idea of what lust was, or because he said, like, the sin of the eyes. And I'm like, okay, your eyes are sinning, you know. But I had no idea really what it was, the scope of it. And so when we got married, and it was still persisting, it actually got worse. So we got married in Calgary. Then Daniel wanted to go to seminary, so we went to Regent, or he went to Regent. And when we were there, it actually got worse. The confessions started to come more frequently, and the compassion that I felt initially just started to melt away. I started to have this like deep sense of dread because it was like I feel like it's going to be like this forever. It's never going to go away. It's actually getting worse, and it got to the point where it was like every few days if he didn't. It was like I could see it on his face, like, oh, he's going to tell me now. But if I didn't see that on his face, I would just begin to expect it every couple days. Is it going to happen now? Is it going to be today? Is it going to be today? So, like, this living in this state of, like, constant, like, high alert suspicion, anxiety. And it just, yeah, that's how that part affected me. In the early days, I think I would see what a dark place emotionally Daniel would get into. Like, he talked about self-hatred, really, like, shame and guilt, and I would see it on him, and I knew that he would get stuck in there, and so I think me being, like, a helper, I tend to just help. I would minimize the feelings that I would have and try to tend to him so that he wouldn't get stuck in it, and so I think what that did was just kind of negate a lot of what I was feeling to help him. But as things started to progress, life just went on, I started to feel okay with actually articulating how I felt. The anger, the anger, the pain, all of that. And because that was really new for me as a woman, because I tended to suppress everything and minimize, it was like this newfound freedom of like angering all over the place. Like I would anger on you, I'd anger on them, I'd anger everywhere. And it was, I had to come to a realization that that way of being angry was actually harmful. It was like bitterness was growing, really like hatred was growing in my heart towards Daniel. Like it became, I came to a place where like he was the enemy. Like I saw him as like, you're gonna hurt me again, aren't you? And so I would defend. I put up these walls in my heart. Like, okay, you can only have just a little bit of who I am and you can't have the rest because I can't trust you. Along with that, I started to realize in those times too when we would talk about stuff related to pornography and stuff that like a lot of my past memories were starting to get triggered. So I had really, again, just shoved all of that down. But I would have a lot of memories kind of like pop up. I'd have a lot of feelings that, you know, somehow I knew weren't really tied to Daniel, but they were just popping up more and more. And so all of these things were surfacing from my past, and they started to get mixed into like the soup of my present, right? And so all of these things were bubbling, and it was mixing in, and it was so messy. And his stuff would feed into my stuff, and it would get all stirred up into that pot. And so what was happening for me was like the stuff that he was sharing with me and going through was triggering a lot of my things from my past, but it actually intensified it. So it intensified my sense of like abandonment. It intensified my sense of loneliness. It intensified my lack of sense of worth or self, of being used. Like it just intensified everything. And I'm sure you can imagine it was messy. Like those were messy years in our life, and it was hard. And so those are some of the ways I think that Daniel's struggles really affected me. Yeah.
Okay, now let's fast forward more to kind of where you guys are at in your journey now. I know things have shifted. There's just so much that you guys have learned, ways that you have found that, you know, you need to properly handle, digest, deal with these realities. So like just what have you learned since that stage to where you are now? And just, talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I think one of the first things I learned was that I should not be his primary accountability. Because I think innately, I want to know everything. Like I want to know who, I want to know what, I want to know where, and I want to pick apart everything. It's not healthy, and I think it comes from this desire in us to want to control something that feels out of control, to give myself a sense of, if I know everything, then I'm going to be okay, but it's really the opposite. If I am his accountability primary, I need to be, you know, keeping tabs on him. I need to check in with him. I need to be a neutral place for him to go if he's struggling, which as a wife, I'm not. I'm not a neutral place. Like if he's telling me, I really struggled today, blah, 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 I'm like, what? Like my hackles will go up, right? And so if I am his primary accountability, it'll shut him down and it'll just create more mistrust in me towards him. And so I had to learn how to trust that he was having actual accountability that worked. And I didn't, you know, when he was like, oh, I've got some accountability partners, I'm like, okay, great, you know, great, go to your accountability partner. I actually wanted to know, you know, how frequently are you meeting with them? How are you guys actually holding each other accountable? And do these guys actually ask you hard questions? You know, how is this happening? And, you know, next I think Daniel and I actually needed to learn when does he actually disclose to me? Because does he disclose to me a month after he acted out? Does he disclose to me 2 months, a week, a couple days? I think in the early times of our marriage, it took him a long time to disclose. And I remember when he would tell me, I would feel like we've been living a lie for X amount of days, X amount of weeks. We've been living a lie. But I've had to come to realize, you know, it's that shame, self-hatred that really blocked him from telling me right away. And so as he's grown in his journey, and as I've grown in my grace for him, things have kind of settled out a little bit with that. But also learning how much does he share, how to be specific without being graphic. And I think that's something we've had to learn too. Personally, I talked about that soup, you know, all of that stuff that was bubbling up, and I needed help for that. I needed to know that he couldn't help me. He couldn't be the only one to help me through all of that. I had to actually come to the end of my own ability in dealing with my own stuff. I think similar to Daniel and to you, I would rather read a whole bunch of books, figure it out on my own, pray to God on my own, get healed in that way, and truck along. But books only took me to a certain point. I actually needed people. People needed to mediate that. And so as I engaged more with my stuff, I began to have more grace on Daniel. Because I think, like, when you begin to see how you or I do avoid areas of pain and shame, I began to realize that that's actually what he's doing too. And at the base of it, that's really what we're both doing. It looks different, and it really is hard, and it sucks that his affects me in that way. But we're really on that same journey of healing and learning how to turn to Jesus instead of to our other things. And so after 18 years of walking together and doing this, I can say that at every point in it, there's hope. There is hope. Even in those days when I thought, oh, it's never going to end, there is hope. And I've come to realize, too, that, like, you know, we know it in our heads. We hear it at church that Jesus came to reconcile us to him, but he also came to reconcile us to others. And marriage is like the working out of that. So, yeah.
Takes a lot of courage for you to sit here. And so we just want to thank you for sharing and for being vulnerable, telling us some of that story. That's significant for, I'm sure, some, maybe many this morning. As we wrap up, I want to wrap up with this real quick. Again, if you're a guy processing this subject, working through this, looking for a place that you can connect and find support, we have a couple guys ready and willing to start a support accountability group in partnership with St. Albert Alliance Church. We would be more than happy to just have you connect in a place where you can be honest and be safe. And so just email me if that's you and you want to do that. And on the flip side, if ladies, if you're processing any layer of this today, whether it's a struggle with pornography, because as we started, we know that this is not just an issue for men, whether it's being a spouse of someone that's wrestling through this, whether this is your own just journey of healing in regards to just your sexual part of who God created you to be, please just reach out to Pastor Ashley and let her know. We'd love to see just a support, a network of women supporting one another in this area as well. So I just want to wrap this up with prayer. I'm going to pray for you guys. I want to pray for you guys, and I want to pray for you who are online, maybe tuning in, watching this as well. So you guys just bow with me as we wrap up. Papa, we come. And we know you already know this, but we confess we are broken. We need your healing touch in all areas of our being, including our sexuality, which has just been devastated and broken as a result of the fall. Thank you for the grace that you've extended and poured out. I'll be willing to bet on all of us again and again and again in this area. Thank you for that. Thank you that you are just continuously looking to walk with us, continuously looking to just reach down and bring us to new levels of freedom. Jesus, you get it. You've been here. You became a human being that you might recognize and understand our struggles. And so just speak as you always do, so kindly, so gently, and so graciously into us, that we might have the courage to maybe for the first time break our silence, bring that which has been hidden in the dark into the light. Holy Spirit, lead, guide, fill, and just empower us. as we look to be your simple servants on earth here as it is in heaven. Pray blessing over Daniel and Tanya. We pray protection over them. We pray for those that are here. We ask for you to work and to move. We pray for those that are going to be watching online. Work, move there. Thank you, God, that you've been with us, that you will never leave nor forsake us, no matter what battle we fight and face. We strive to be someone who overcomes. Bless us as we go from here. In Jesus' name, amen.